This episode of Cognitive Dissonance is brought to you by our patrons. You fucking rock. Be advised that this show is not for children, the faint of heart, or the easily offended. The explicit tag is there for a reason.
Recording live from Glory Hole Studios in Chicago, this is Cognitive Dissonance. Every episode we blast anyone who gets in our way. We bring critical thinking, skepticism, and irreverence to any topic that makes the news, makes it big, or makes us mad. It's skeptical, it's political, and there is no welcome mat. This is episode 327 of Cognitive Dissonance, and we are joined this episode, Cecil, by Matt Dillahunty. Matt from The Atheist Experience. I think that's where you're most well-known, also from The Atheist Debates. Thank you so much. I think it's been, like 4 years since we've had Matt on.
A couple years at least, for sure.
It's been a long time.
Welcome back, Matt.
I thought you said there was no welcome, Matt, and then you say...
We say it every time, and we also sell welcome mats.
Did they say this is not a welcome mat?
They should. That would be a great.
They really should. They just say glory hole on them right now.
I'd be afraid to put that on my front door.
I'm not sure we've sold them, but I'm not sure who's putting them out. You know what I mean? The neighbors might object a little bit.
You get something weird in your mail slot, right? That's for sure.
You have to put it on the back door. Yeah.
So we wanted to just talk about a couple of stories with you. The first one is from Right Wing Watch. This is Kenneth Copeland now has a direct line to deliver messages from God to President Trump.
Oh, you just said it. You just said it.
And I had.
You had made a big stink about how you never were never going to say that.
Well, but
that
I lasted, quoted a line.
Seriously, no shit. Like a week.
I read. First of all,
a week and 2 days.
The length of my commitments that I'm willing to make at this point.
Yeah.
Damn it.
You did say it.
It doesn't count if I read it.
I don't know about that. I think it counts.
I claim a mulligan on my entire life. Is that something I can do?
I think you can do that.
I've been trying you all should. Of 2016 you to mulligan should. My life.
If we could just mulligan like 2016.
I know, right? Believe me, nobody wants that more than me, buddy.
Wait a minute. We were going to do a counterpoint. We thought you were a Trump supporter.
Oh, my God.
No, but I've interacted with a lot of Trump supporters, and holy cow. You know, it was difficult and it was frustrating. And I'm sure on election night, I probably blocked 24 people on Facebook. And I love how, you know, people were coming in. They're like, oh, you're just setting up an echo chamber for yourself. And I'm like, look, douchebag, I will be happy to speak to you in public or debate you in some other forum. But I just got shit on in the worst possible way. And yes, Facebook is going to be my safe space. I'd rather not have a bunch of racist shits. And all the oh, my gosh, I went off on pretty much everybody for everything. There's people who are like, oh, I thought you were above this. Don't you appreciate honest discourse? Yes, I do. And you're free to email me or set up a debate. Or hell, maybe even do a hangout sometime. But when I'm on Facebook and I see a racist dipshit who couldn't figure out exactly what the worst possible thing he could do with his vote was and just guessed, I don't really need to spend time with you. So Copeland, and I think we're going to talk about Baker in a minute too, but they are essentially on the fringes of Christianity. They don't represent mainstream group. They're not as fringe as like Westboro or Steven Anderson. I would put them on a par with Alex Jones, who's another Trump guy.
Right.
They have this audience that's built in that represents some chunk of the there, but for the grace of God, go I crowd. And Copeland is excited, I think, because he recognizes in Trump a similarly irrational mind.
And that's the call? That's like their calling card? It's like, I also can't form a coherent and straightforward linear path to thinking. Like, let's do it.
Yeah, you're hanging out at the atheist convention and you spot the person, you know, in the 9/11 truther shirt or the flat earth shows up at your convention, and all of a sudden you're like, there's my people. A con artist. A con artist can always spot a mark, even if he started to believe his own BS. And in Copeland's case, I happen to view him as a fairly clear con artist, although I think he believes his own BS. And so he looks at Trump as somebody who is clearly going to be a mark and is clearly fringe enough that he might be able to exploit that. But you don't, you're not going to find, I mean, we're talking about two like fringe jackasses in Christianity. I'm sure Trump has endorsements from all kinds. I'm sure Hagee endorsed him because Hagee's a non-fringe jackass. But, you know, the more moderate, it makes me so sad that now I'm trying to normalize some really awful people because they're not as bad as some other people. I'm not going to play that game.
I want to ask you about this, though, because it's one thing to look at somebody like Copeland and say that he's fringe, but how fringe can you really be when the president of the United States just appointed you to be a part of your faith advisory council? Like, you know, the problem is when I read that, one of the concerns that I have is immediately it's like, well, why do we have a faith advisory council? But beyond that, like, you take a guy who's fringe like that, and now we're making those fringe guys mainstream. You take a guy like Alex Jones, the president's talking to him. It's really hard to say, well, he's just a fringe guy. He's just, you know, he's just some guy who lives on the periphery. Man, when the president-elect is talking to you and giving you time, you don't get a whole lot more mainstream. You're starting at least to creep up on the mainstream, don't you think?
No. I think if you'd have said this in any other year, you'd have been dead on. But when you have a fringe president.
Well, how can you even have a fringe president, though? Like, I want him to be a fringe president because then he wouldn't be the president. but, like, you cease being the fringe when you get the millions of votes, when you get 40 million votes. Like, it's hard for me to be like.
60 million, Tom.
Oh, God.
60 million.
I am going to be actually sick.
Strange. It's strangely listed because I've never heard of a faith advisory council. What I have heard is the Advisory Council on Faith-Based Initiatives, and I've heard of the Advisory Faith Council, which may have been what they meant. But Obama named a transgender person to the Advisory Faith Council. I don't have a problem so much with the idea that there might be some sort of council like this, provided that their goal is to just merely recognize that we live in a country where there are people with a lot of different religions, sure, and they need to work out how we're going to not kill each other.
Let's listen to what Copeland says about this, if we can, because I think he's rejoicing. You know what? The reason this story struck me is that this guy thinks he's got a main line to God, right? That's the reason I wanted to talk a little bit about this.
Is he more excited about the main line to God or the main line to Trump?
Well, and that's a good point, we'll right? Because out. He wants to be the conduit, right? Yeah. And I actually think it's kind of funny because, and I don't want to get too far ahead of myself, but you know, like these guys are all Protestants, right? And part of the Protestant Reformation was to get rid of the middleman, right? The priest middleman.
Yeah, right, yeah.
And in this case, he's rejoicing that he'll be a fucking intercessory between, you know, God himself and the president. Like, I think we can cut out the middleman. Like, we've been working on that for several hundred years.
Just go right to him.
Right.
Narcissists, can we throw in the same room and not have
Well, let's play the clip.
All right, I'm going to play it, and then we'll stop it as we go through to sort of talk a little bit about it.
You've been a part of the Faith Advisory Council that was assembled together. James Robinson had a part in that. A number of ministers, nationally known ministers, have been a part of that. What would you say that would be of most interest to our Christian audience, especially the faith audience, that you've heard in those?
It's nobody but a faith
audience.
That
doesn't even make any sense. Like,
the faith audience. What?
Well, to be fair, the three of us are listening to this.
I guess you got us there. Yeah, it's like, okay, everybody but Right Wing Watch and Cognitive Dissonance with Matt Dillahunty. That's it. You got us.
Meetings, those phone calls that gives you the most hope, and what you're listening for, what was your ear tuned to that you've heard out of that was the most encouraging thing as a Christian?
Terry, I believe the thing that, excuse me, not so much what was said.
God has given him the gift of tongues.
I know. He's got to stop and
pause. Are we listening to Moses or Aaron? Well, the one thing, good thing is that, you know, if I have to clear my throat or there's a problem or whatever else, it's no big deal because I'm not portraying myself as anything other than a human being. But as soon as you are the proposed voice of God, God has given me a message to give to you today. excuse me there, Terry. I think the message, there was a message.
Right?
Holy crap.
Conversations in those meetings. But the fact that we were having them, have no doubt at this point, from what I've heard, what I've seen that's taken place over the last month that this has been happening.
Long pauses.
If something were to really, really strike my heart, if God really showed me something that I felt like, and that the Lord would say, you deliver this.
Yeah. Yeah.
I have no doubt but what I could deliver it.
Well, hang on a minute. If the Lord gives a message to a messenger, would he not imbue that messenger with the ability to impart the message? And if he didn't do that, wouldn't it be a fucking lame dick fucking message? Like, well, yeah. I gave you the message. You gave it to that fucking mute guy. That was like literally the worst. Are you kidding me?
Hey, what kind of dick God would tell you to say something to somebody and you just weren't going to be able to do it? Sorry, Mr. Trump won't actually see you, but I've got a message from God. Trump doesn't care.
No, Trump didn't give you that message, and he is God.
Look, you can tweet it at him just like everybody else, okay?
Yeah, and at the end of that complaint, after God has told you to go talk to Trump and Trump says no, Copeland will still say, thanks, Obama.
It's not true in presidents past. Mm-hmm. Even though we had influence in some areas, in some ways. But if the Lord were to say something to me and the other presidents that what little I've had to do with them.
Literally terrible at your job. You're literally terrible at speaking. You are the worst at this.
I don't know. I don't know whether I could have ever gotten anybody to listen to me or not. But I am totally convinced that if the Lord were to say something to me, if the Lord were to say something to David, or if the Lord were to say something to Bishop that the president needs to hear, I have no doubt.
Yeah.
That we could do it and do it quickly.
Yes, sir.
At this point, though, if he could actually demonstrate that he could ever deliver a message effectively and quickly, I might believe. I don't think it's possible, and it would be a miracle.
That's awesome.
Because it's taken us like 85 minutes to get through this two little paragraph. Pause, and I have no doubt, and we could do it and do it quickly, and the president needs to hear. Thus saith the Lord.
And have audience to say, thus saith the Lord. And he wouldn't just turn it over to an aide or something and just write it off. He would listen, and it would mean something to him.
It would mean something to him because you're speaking English. For whatever reason, the infinitely wise, almighty creator of the universe keeps sending Cletus the slack-jawed yokel to stammer and yaw about, I think if God told me you needed to hear this.
Well, let's listen to this Jim Baker one, because this happened, Matt, this clip that we're going to play for Jim Baker, that happened the night of the election. So we're going to hear their reaction, and, you know, I'm going to try to stifle my vomit here, when Trump actually went. So they're going to announce it sort of on their program. So this is Jim Baker on his terrible show.
Fox, oh Fox God. Just gave them 274.
274.
Fox has
president
declared
Donald Trump.
Donald Trump is president.
Listen to that guy.
It lacked.
Yeah, it lacked. Oh, they are freaking out, though. Of course, though. I mean, like, I'm going to be real honest, though. If
if Hillary would have won and we were doing our live election coverage, I would be happy too. I would have high five too. So I'm not gonna, you know.
Yeah.
I would have high five. That would have been like, hell yeah.
I'm still willing to high five. Yeah. Can we make that happen?
Yeah, sir,
I've got my hand in the air like I just don't care. Can we get that done, please?
I think one of the reasons why it's more annoying is because I was actually anticipating having that reaction myself and did not.
Right.
So there's sour grapes going on for sure.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, fucking Nate Silver. Asshole.
Who taught that guy math?
Yeah, how do you fuck it up that bad? Although I did see a bunch of stuff that said that he was the one who gave Trump the biggest chance out of, like, anybody. Supposedly, that's the line he's touting now, is that he gave he gave Trump the biggest chance, and then Trump came
in. Didn't give him a bigger chance than the American idiots who voted for him.
Yeah, right.
Although to be fair, I looked at, you know, and I actually posted a graph because, you know, I like some data. And as it turns out, despite an increase in population, the number of people who voted for the Republicans declined. It's from 2008 to 2012, it went down. And from 2012 to 2016, it went down only just marginally. Effectively, about the same number of people voted, even though it's a slightly smaller portion of the population. But you could look at the Republican vote as a straight line. With the Democratic Party, though, there were 10 million fewer Democratic votes in 2016 from what there was in 2008. And I think it was 4 million less than 2012. So the number of people who are voting Democrat, now Obama was probably an oddity.
You
know, the 2008 election with him, we're probably not going to see numbers like that again. But it dropped dramatically in 12, and it dropped even more in 16 to the point where, yeah, she won the popular vote, but it was pretty much dead even. And only like 56% of people even bothered to show up and vote. So the 10 million drop, even with a population increase, there were, I think, 6 million third-party votes. But that still means there's 4 million that didn't bother to show up at all.
Well, one of the things that I think the Electoral College, like, especially in our state, right? So, like, we're a blue state. We're always going to be a blue state, no matter what happens. And so when Obama ran, we're in Illinois. So when Obama ran... Just, I feel like people probably came out so they could be part of history. Like, I would love to vote this man in, sort of thing.
I agree with that.
But then when it finally came to pass, the votes don't matter until the electoral colleges, because it's the states that vote him in. It's not the people that vote him in, right? So the states are voting him in. And so it mattered what the states had to say. We look at the popular vote, but it doesn't even matter. Like, the popular vote is irrelevant.
Right.
It's the states that are deciding who is the person who gets to represent the country. And
I wouldn't say it's irrelevant as long as, like, 26 states have their electoral votes bound to the popular vote.
That is true. No, that is true.
None of the popular vote and still win.
Yeah. Let me be more specific. What I mean to say is the full United States popular vote doesn't have an impact on the election at the end. Now, the state popular vote matters based on, you know, that, but so state by state it matters, but adding it all up at the end doesn't matter, because it doesn't, you could have, there's been some models, I watched a video on it once, where you could have a tiny portion of the vote, as long as you won certain states and you won by 51%, like, you could have a much smaller proportion of the votes based on how the states give votes. But what I really do feel like, you know, it disenfranchises the people here in my state to say, well, you know, who cares? It's going to be blue anyway, so why should I go out and vote? And so I think some people who probably weren't going to, they came out for Barack Obama, they might not have come out for Hillary because of that.
Well, Texas was within 4 at one point. I mean, and some of these states, I mean, the thing to remember is that most of these states, well, none of these states have always been, you know, uniform.
Yeah, no, that's true, yeah.
But I got into a number of arguments with third party voters, and I have friends, I have co-hosts who voted third party. And, you know, I keep trying to get my point across, which is this idea that your vote is useless is often leveraged by some third parties to say, okay, well, then use it for something else. But the thing is, it's not useless, because the polls suck, as we learned on Sunday.
Yeah, for sure.
But the voting data doesn't necessarily suck unless you're just tossing your vote away. So if you vote, if there's a district or a state or whatever that is traditionally blue or red, and they start to see a trend based on votes that it might be going a different way, and yeah, I'm sticking with the two-party thing, that's how they determine where to spend money, and that's how things eventually change. As long as you keep this thing of, well, I live in a red state or a blue state or a red county or a blue county, there's no point in me ever voting because there's not enough people like me here to switch it. As long as you keep that mentality going, you will be correct. It is a self-enforcing prophecy there. I voted for Bernie in the primary. And I voted for Hillary in the general. And actually, the day I voted for Bernie in the primary, I said, I voted for Bernie today, but I expect to be voting for Hillary in the general.
Yeah.
And there were people who said, why? Why would you do that? Why would I was like, because Bernie's not going to be on the fucking ballot.
Yeah.
And a friend of mine went and on election day, he wrote in as a write-in candidate, Bernie fucking Sanders. And I was like, you are not too stupid for me to actually engage with. Because first of all, there's no such person as Bernie fucking So you didn't even vote for the person you thought you did. But meanwhile, you know, when you compare the two candidates, one of these, Hillary or Trump, one of them is going to be president. And when you compare the two of them, if you don't care that voting for Bernie fucking Sanders increases the likelihood that Trump gets in, then I don't even want to talk to you because you don't. People are like, well, I voted my conscience. Well, then clearly your conscience is defective because it doesn't care enough about the Supreme Court or a living wage or the fact that the president may appoint as many as three justices to the Supreme Court. We're already missing one. There's two
possible
three that are damn near, dead. You don't care about living wage. You don't care about, you know, health care or whatever. But I don't think the truth is, or the best thing is a happy medium. I'm fine with some radical ideas. But I'm not going to throw civil rights and Supreme Court justices with lifetime appointments that are going to affect an entire generation. Because there were people that were like, "Hey, man, it's no big deal. He's going to be there for 4 years, maybe eight if we're not lucky. So it's worth it for me to cast, you know, my third party vote." And you know, I'm not saying you're not free to vote however you want. But if your reason is that this is only 4 years, then you weren't even thinking about the Supreme Court at all.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because there's at least one, probably three justices that he's going to get to appoint. And that's 20, 30 years on the good side. The time for a protest vote is not in the final general presidential election when Supreme Court hangs in the balance. And the time to make a third party viable is also not then. What the third parties need to do to actually get to viability, I mean, okay, we can talk about throwing out the Electoral College. I'm probably okay with that. We can talk about ranked voting, where you basically put your
first past the post
preferred order, and they get a, you know. But I think that leads to completely middle of the road crap. You're not going to get any sort of dramatic change. So it maintains the status quo more often than not. But if you want to make a third party viable, then you need to get your third party candidates in Congress. You need to get them in the House of Representatives. Then you need to get them in the Senate. And then you need to go for the presidency. Because if you just keep aiming for the presidency and saying, oh, I'm going to be a spoiled brat, and because you didn't pick my candidate, I'm going to burn the whole thing to the ground, you are never going to make third party candidates viable.
That's absolutely true. I feel like they need to be local, and they need to be in people's face, being local, finding out like what they're for, what they're about, and then growing from there. You don't grow by just automatically winning the lottery, right? You go out and you try to build, you build, and they're not doing that. Or not. I've seen many times. I've seen Green Party. I'd say constantly see Green Party for the governor in Illinois, but I rarely see Green Party for anybody else. It's once in a great while I'll see a Green Party.
It's a very entitled viewpoint. You got to put in a little bit of work to kind of move up.
Yep.
And you got to let people know who you are. And right now, you know, I remember it wasn't a handful of years ago. And I agree with Greens on some stuff. I agree with Libertarians on some stuff. But the Libertarian Party platform in one state had cannibalism in their party platform. And they're basically arguing that because, you know, the government shouldn't intervene, that if I should be allowed to do that, and they should be allowed to do that, and anything that prevents that is a violation of freedom.
That's
and
insanity. It's too
much regulation. And they put that in their platform. Now, I think I could perhaps agree in principle on some aspects of the philosophical argument that they're making about freedom. but they're ignoring all the things about, you know, public safety and consent and how do you avoid coercion and all this stuff. And they're avoiding the fact that it's stupid to try to convince America that you are the next great new party and you're in favor of cannibalism.
Oh, right. You're like, this is the hill you're going to die on. This is it. This is, you're trying to win a political election and you're choosing like some crazy esoteric argument to try.
Well, your polling place is Motel Hell. Right. So it makes sense.
How dare you come and use violence to take my tax money away while I'm eating my best friend.
Right. All right, let's try to finish this clip out here.
And I'll tell you
there's
why.
There's a God that's listening.
I have lived through a lot.
Including your own incarceration, you fraud.
The best part is the wife's like, yes, you
He's
have.
He's gone through hell. Yeah. He deserved it.
he was almost poor for a couple of years.
We kept his money warm while he was in prison.
Exactly.
It was in a blind trust.
Yes, you have.
I have seen from a child in Michigan, I have helped build the main major television networks for Christ. And I've seen miracles. Every time it took a miracle. It took a miracle to build CBN. It took a miracle to build TBN. They had to move a mountain at TBN. Mm-hmm. I've seen the miracles. Beyond miracles.
Yeah, I'm doing a magic show this weekend at CES 300 thing. And I'm picking out music for a couple of different bits, but there's not going to be music. But I really think, you know, next time I'm just going to like hire a band to stand in the background. And automatically insert whatever mood music. So
no matter what.
When they start to be upbeat, they then I don't have to worry about it.
Yeah, just run with it. Just run with it.
But I believe today, I have seen the greatest miracle I have ever seen.
If you've never actually seen a miracle.
I guess that's true, right? It doesn't matter. It's like whatever's available at 4 a.m. in the bar. You know, I'll just take any miracle. It doesn't matter.
You were a 2 and now you're a 10.
Praise Jesus.
I'm using the Trump scale. If he would have said this is the greatest miracle I've ever heard of, that would have been a much better quote.
Right? This is like, the greatest. Really? This is the
Trump
greatest miracle.
That is greater than Jesus rising from the dead? Or, yeah. Hell, I think eating the 5 loaves and fishes thing is better than
It's a hell of a trick, actually.
The greatest miracle he's ever seen is something which had a 25% chance of happening, according to Nate Silver, happen. Like, that's it. Like, a 25% chance of happening. It was like, wow, that's the greatest miracle possible.
Yeah. All the wise men said, no, it won't happen.
It's an interesting point, though. If all the wise men said, no, it won't happen, then Jim Baker's not wise.
It's funny because the way he presented it throughout his whole, we've been following Jim Baker for a long time, and the clips that we see, the way he's been presenting it has been, you've got to go out there and do this. This is what God wants us to do. God wants it. He was never saying like Donald Trump is definitely going to win. I don't remember him saying those words. He was saying like, if Donald Trump doesn't win, it's the end of the United States.
Right.
If Donald Trump doesn't win, it's the end of our rights. If Donald Trump doesn't win, we have to go underground and hide from the mainstream because they're going to hate religion. So he's been playing on that, but he hasn't been saying like, definitely God is going to win.
So this is actually a really good con. From Baker, because you should, if you're in this position, support the long odd candidate because you've got nothing to lose.
Right.
If they don't win, it's the expected result. And you can blame it on the godless communist liberal media supported by Satan.
Sure.
Yet if he does win, you've got a miracle, which you can claim that you predicted and you are on the right side of all this because you're getting your information from God. It is literally a no lose proposition for him.
Yeah.
And it reminds, you know, we talked about the Bill Nye Ken Ham debate, and that was a no lose proposition for Ken Ham, because if he won, which he didn't, then he gets to say, hey, we're winning, I need more money. And if he loses, which he did, he gets to go back to his people and say, hey, we're losing, we need more money.
I see this Baker thing and I think, I think he's got to be disappointed, actually, that Trump won. Because the whole narrative that he's been working on is, because this guy's goal is not is to sell buckets, right? All Jim Baker cares about, he's a bucket salesman.
Yeah, he wants buckets to sell as many buckets
right?
as he can.
He sells buckets of freeze-dried food. He's just a bucket salesman. That's his only thing. And he sells apocalypse buckets. And his whole apocalypse has been based on the likelihood of a Hillary yeah. win. So I think what he was doing is he was looking at Hillary and saying, Hillary is most likely to win. I'm going to predict all the doom and gloom that when Hillary wins, it's the end of the world and there's nuclear bombs are going to go off and it's going to my bucket sales go through the roof. And then and so in order to do that, I have to predict that Hillary's going to win. I have to want her not to win because that's apocalyptic and I can't want the apocalypse because that would be evil. But reality is that I want you to think there's an apocalypse, so you buy my garbage buckets, my yeah. stupid, shitty buckets, right? And so I think that's what he's been doing. And now Trump wins, and he's got to be like, well, fucking all the doom and gloom I predicted yeah. with a Hillary win well, doesn't sell me buckets.
But now it's doom and gloom with Muslims.
They had the numbers. They said it can't. I mean, almost everybody around me even was giving up. The prophets were even giving up because they were showing the odds and the numbers. And they said the numbers aren't there. All the polls were wrong.
Right.
Yeah. All the polls were wrong, Lori.
It's really a miracle. It's a miracle.
And the prophets were right.
They were.
God was right.
You just said they were wrong.
You just said yeah. they were wrong.
Just a moment ago, you said that the prophets were wrong, and now the prophets are right.
What's funny to me, too, is he says, you know, the prophets were giving up. Then he says the prophets were right. So I'm assuming he doesn't mean the prophets were right to give up. if you hear him, he's like, all the polls were wrong and the prophets were right. And then he realizes, hey, wait a minute, I'm supposed to be selling God. And he inserts, God was right. You should have started with God was right, and then God's prophets were right. But that's just the way he thinks. He's going to, you know, he's marketing the prophets really while pretending that he's marketing God. So he starts with saying the prophets were right and then kind of slips in this addition correction so that it's clear that he, yeah, yes, I'm still talking about God, but really it's about me and my buckets.
Like, what the fuck? So, Tom, we read for this particular show, we read David Icke's book, The Biggest Secret. We read chapter 16, which is Where Have All the Children Gone? So now if you're sort of just catching up with what we're doing, we've been reading a chapter of this book. We've had to skip a couple of weeks because of a lot of stuff that's been going on. We've been very busy. We had a full 7 hours worth of broadcast that we did
for the
off
election,
the cuff
right?
for the election. So we decided instead to skip a couple of weeks. But we've been reading this book at this point for a couple months, and we're reading each chapter, sort of dissecting each chapter. We give a little summary of the chapter, and then we give each other a quiz. We make a little quiz for each other, and it's so you can play along at home. And you can decide whether or not you can pass the test of actually reading this book.
And sometimes the best way to get information is just to hear us kind of, you know, bandy about and quiz each other
on
the amazing yeah. intellectual notions that David Icke yeah. floats forth in
yeah.
The Most Much Biggest Secret.
All right. So, Tom, how many questions do you have?
I got three, but they're a power three.
Okay. So I got four. So let me
All
go
right.
first.
All right.
Tom, which pop star is purportedly a mind-controlled slave, and what song led Icke to believe this?
Oh, God.
A, the Jesus Lizard, Queen for a Day. B, Skrillex, Reptile.
That's great.
C, Crystal Gale, Don't It Make Your Brown Eyes Blue. And D, Reptile people are responsible for all music. It makes their tiny little tympanic membranes tickle.
Well, it's got to be the tympanic membranes because that's the best answer there.
It's not. It's
I know I'm choosing the best answer.
Crystal Gale.
I know.
Don't it make your brown eyes blue. She wrote that.
Oh.
Because, and let me tell you the backstory on why she wrote that.
Okay.
She wrote that down because she's a mind-controlled slave, and one of the things that one of the crazy Nazi doctors wanted to do to the Jews during World War II was to try to turn their brown eyes blue. And so she wrote that song specifically because they were so stupid. They told her about it while she was mind controlled. And then she just couldn't control herself and just wrote.
And that's
a song.
How you communicate information so. Is to write pop songs.
To write
songs.
Pop songs that yeah. sort of hide
sad
the,
love
yeah,
songs.
That hide the meaning underneath, right. Tom. Yeah. That's how
that's how, that's how you could. The best way to communicate an idea is to hide the idea.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Wait,
sure.
No, that's
like
actually never
it's like
the
subliminal.
Case.
It's like right. playing something backwards, kind of.
Cecil, before they're allowed to enter the positions of power, what must world leaders allow to be played with?
Hey, now.
A, their Pokeballs.
Okay, that's fair.
B, their minds, such as they are, and as reported by that esteemed and lauded member of high society, the late foreign minister of Guyana, which is, I double-checked, real. C, their American Girl doll collection, but only if you remember to treat them more carefully next time. These are goddamn collector's items.
I thought you were talking about a real doll collection, because I got one of those. So,
or D, their feelings.
It's B.
It is B.
It is B.
It is
it's
B.
The saddest B.
It's B. Yeah. yeah. Right. I love when they get he gets all of his information from the late foreign minister of Guyana.
Sure. Yeah. Well, yeah.
That's a thing, yeah. right? That's
didn't he have a TV show for a while?
Jim Jones? Yeah. yeah. Great job. It was a short-lived program.
All right, Tom, what's the
had
best
a twist ending?
It really did. What's the best way for the Brotherhood to carry out their assassinations? A, use their monoatomic gold to disappear into the fourth dimension and then pop in to the third right behind you and then snap your tiny human neck like a toothpick? B.
Yes, no, I don't need any more choices.
B.
It's my favorite.
Use their oligarchic power to control all aspects of your finances, crushing you mentally and then forcing you so far down you have to so far down on your luck you have to suck cock for a bag of combos. And then at that point, you'd rather just eat a gun instead.
Are they pizza flavored combos?
Bologna flavored.
Oh. oh, God.
I'd rather eat a gun than that. Too. C. Since they control all seats of power in our government, they just arrest you for some made-up charge and then throw you in jail. Yeah. And while you're there, you get shanked in the yard. And then you get stabbed with an improvised device in the recreational area.
Nice. Nice.
Or D, they, over many, many years, put you into a, and I used all E's for this, ye oldie mind control program. And slowly implant thoughts into your head.
Well, I'm going to guess that it's D.
It is ye it is oldie. D. And, it is and I did oldie. Ye oldie, mind control, and program nice.
All with E's.
All
with
E's
superfluous E's.
All with superfluous E's.
I love it. Although I guess it's not superfluous in the ye oldie, but
that's
it's just
very true.
Cecil, what is education doing to children today?
Oh, I don't know. I got one of these questions too.
A, learning them. Learning them real good and proper like. B, Common Core, which is really a reptilian plan to core or remove the center mass of the brainstem from children by teaching them how to think about math differently. When children learn concepts from different angles than their parents, parts of their minds wither and die, leaving the perfect space for reptile eggs to incubate.
It's that one.
C,
I wish it was that one. This book would be so much more interesting.
It'd be great. Yeah. Allowing secret shadow governments ruled by the Rothschilds and their ilk to manipulate and mind control generations of people so that the lizard people can seize the power that they already have and use it to hold power over the people they already control.
I think it's that one.
Or D, tirelessly working to educate a generation of lazy good-for-nothings who just want to sext each other while you stand in front of 30 of these awful ingrates questioning why you even bothered to get that master's degree and wondering what percentage of your pension you could really live off of once dad dies and leaves you the house.
It's C.
It's C.
It is C.
It's C. So I know. I, tough choices.
All right. How are we sure Anton LaVey was evil?
I love it already.
A. He has naturally squinty eyes.
Truth. It's true. It's true.
B, his grandmother came from Transylvania, legendary home of the blood-sucking vampire, oh, and God. He loved horror movies.
Oh, Jesus.
C, he stirs his Neapolitan ice cream into a reddish-brown homogeneous lump before he eats it. Or D, he put cream in his Earl Grey tea.
Oh,
and that one's for you, Marsh.
That's Marsh. That's yeah. a shout-out yeah. to Marsh. Yeah. It's B.
It is B.
It's B. Well done.
Transylvania. I love that Anton LaVey loved horror movies. It's a,
so do the. That's why there's a whole industry of horror movies. Cecil, many soldiers, and we just know this is true, Many soldiers become multiples after witnessing terrible events on the battlefield.
Oh, multiple personalities. I remember this now.
Yeah. What the fuck does this mean?
It's multiple personalities. I just answered your question. I'm sorry.
You know, I don't know why I write these.
I'm sorry.
I don't even know why I write these.
I didn't mean to do that. I didn't mean to blow the big secret, Tom. I didn't mean to blow the biggest secret either. So it's kind of not. That was a good Smalley side there, actually. That's not bad.
All right.
Go.
A. Dick. In the moments immediately.
No, it's like A.
You always do.
That's fair.
In the moments immediately following a traumatic and violent event, it is not uncommon for a rift to occur in space and time, causing time to run temporarily backward to the moment of a person's conception and splitting the mother's egg. This is how twins and triplets or multiples are made.
I like this.
The reptile people can sense this rift through the ripples it causes in the fourth dimension and use the newly created embryo as their own, imbuing it with reptilian DNA. This is why there's always one evil twin. See Cain and Abel and Danny DeVito as proof.
See, I like this. Your book is so much better. Your book is so much better than David Icke's book.
B. When soldiers are exposed to terrible shit, their minds fracture often over and over into honeycomb-like file cabinets of self, which pieces are then usable like horcruxes to manipulate soldiers into becoming evil, mind-controlled robots, eventually trying to kill Harry Potter.
How much does it cost to get a blowjob from a horcrux?
Depends on the neighborhood, from my experience.
That's true.
C. Terrible battlefield events cause soldiers to fracture in other dimensions. When this happens, these soldiers become multiples, often causing terrible havoc across different realities and other dimensions, each fighting to become the one.
See, Jet Li. Okay, that's good.
Or D.
I love that you remembered an action movie plot. That's the best part, is that you don't know anything about action
I've
movies.
I've never even seen that whole movie. I've just heard it referenced.
Oh, okay. That's, wow. Good
I
for
know,
you.
Right?
Good for you.
Or D. Often the only remedy for the trauma of battle is for a soldier to binge watch episodes of John and Kay Plus 8. Fans of this show are called multiples.
It's B.
It is B.
But sans Horcrux. But yeah
it's I may have editorialized a little bit, admittedly. Some artistic license
right.
goes
so Tom,
into these answers.
Tom, Bohemian Grove is a place where Satanists fucking kill people. Where do they get all the children they kill? A. For as little as the price of a cup of coffee a day, you can import a special sacrificial child from a third world country. B, you abduct them from nearby neighborhoods. Always eat local.
Oh, nice. Nicely done.
Well, they're going to get little Jenny if she doesn't stop fucking asking for a goddamn pony. Or D, all the evil feminists that don't have time to get coat hanger abortions.
Oh, God.
Raise them in veal cages for a few years and then donate them to the cause. Every year, the head Satanist in the world, the President of the United States, pardons one on Easter. It's B.
I don't want to play this
local.
Anymore.
They eat local, Tom. That's how it works.
That's amazing.
All right, so this is my synopsis. The CIA makes drugs like the LSD widely available so we can drop out of reality. When all the lizards really had to do to create a non-participatory culture is to create the internet. We follow the reptile way of educating kids, which means that mind control is so invasive that people won't need the police because they are too submissive, as evidenced by the police having fucking tanks. Also, anal can change your mind. So that's it.
And you can change your mind on anal, actually.
This chapter was just a big, long list, again, of people, though, that are evil,
that are doing horrible shit, right.
That are stealing kids, and that are, like, raping kids. They're talking about, like, at one point, he's talking about, like, this girl was raped at NASA and, like, the UN. Like, he was naming
like all
the places
over.
Where this girl
all
was
all over, yeah.
That is completely
take one down, pass them around.
So for the next chapter, it looks pretty short, actually, the next chapter. So
I've heard that before.
17 for next time. So if you're playing along at the home game, chapter 17 in David Icke's book, The Biggest Secret, is next.
Trumpy, you can do stupid things.
All right, so we want to talk about this story. This is unsurprisingly from Right Wing Watch. We got some audio here. This is Michelle O'Bachman. Is that still funny? Is she still an O'Bachman at this point?
Yeah.
She is for another 20 days or so, right?
Yeah, more than that. I know, right? It's like 40 days or whatever. Oh, God. Yeah, she's
still. Oh, God. Is it still funny? I want it to still be funny, guys.
She's Michelle O'Bachman.
Oh, no. Oh, God. All right. She's commenting on Donald Trump's victory. Oh, God. She says, the Lord did this.
Actually. So. Actually,
fuck you, Lord.
You did this.
Yeah,
you did this. You
fucking Jill Stein voters.
All right, there we go. This is Michelle O'Bachman talking to Richard Barton, who's dressed like a Star Trek red shirt. Yeah, right now.
He's just gonna disappear behind that rock at any moment and come out covered in tribbles.
Yeah, he's gonna have a tribble on his dick.
This is probably the key graphic of the entire night.
Key graphic.
Yeah, you graphic. It's past tense for graphic, because you can past tense a noun. Hey, see that
you
car?
You do that shit all the time.
I'm funny when I do it. I'm funny when I do it, motherfucker.
I don't know about that.
I don't either.
This is when.
Hang on. This is New York Times.
Yes.
This is New York Times showing when the night started, they predicted that Hillary had an 80% chance of winning.
That's right.
See, we only like the New York Times, though. We only like the New York Times when they agree with us.
Right.
Other than that, it's a garbage rag made for garbage people with garbage ideas.
The failing New York Times, right?
Failing New York Times. Can we just talk real quick?
Failure. Failure.
I want to read one of his tweets. I love this tweet so much. So he was harassed at, not Pence, wasn't harassed.
Harassed is too strong.
That is way too strong.
Yeah.
Pence went to a show over the week. He went to go see Hamilton.
Yeah.
It was in New York, and this is amazing. So he said he went there, and the cast sort of talked to him, and they said, "Hey, please protect people that are marginalized," and they were booing him, and the cast stopped them from booing him, and then they said, "Hey, please stop. You know, please take a moment to consider this sort of thing."
Right.
And I read what they said. I didn't listen to it, but I read what they said, and I was like, "Okay, like yeah, just like these people on stage looked down and told him, you know, something really sort of like some you know platitudes. You know, it's nothing really."
I have a question about this, and it's a little bit of a side question, but so you know, Mike Pence and everybody kind of knows that like one of the things he's famous for is his proponent. He's a big proponent of conversion therapy.
Sure. Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
So I do think it's kind of ironic that he went to a theater, right? Which is like the gayest place on earth. Cause if he had his druthers, they all would have converted from theater majors to poli sci majors, right? Or business majors.
Or religious studies majors. Right.
He would have converted them all away from drama. I'll tell you that much.
Sure.
You know,
but speaking of drama,
yes,
right?
Nice segue. He did a great job.
So that Pence looks at him, kind of nods, and that was the end of it. But then Donald Trump.
This is so good.
Donald Trump went to Twitter.
And so
this
great.
This is what he said, quote, "The theater must always be a safe and special place." And the cast of Hamilton was very rude last night to a very good man. Mike Pence, apologize.
Hashtag Trump SJW. Hashtag Eli Bosnick.
Hashtag Eli Bosnick story. He really thinks the theater, the place where we go to get political commentary all the time,
right,
should be a safe and special place.
Because the arts have never been the place for controversy.
Never.
Or for challenging our deeply held ideas
How
and principles.
How is this any different than those fucking rageaholics raging on safe spaces
at
other
universities?
I mean, like we talked about this earlier. Like when it comes to like saying this auditorium is a safe space, and if they're just like talking about different ideas, and they're like, "No, I declare it a safe space. No, you can't talk about it." Yeah, you know, I think it's stupid, right? But that's never it's only happened one time that I know of. And as you said, it's anomalous. It's not a thing that happens all the time. It's not like every time you walk into a big auditorium, people are like, "This is a safe space." that's not what happens. But we're against that, right? We're against that idea. What, you know, if you go to college,
you don't get to ad hoc declare in the moment, safe space, and then you shut down conversation. That's not happening.
And
that's why it's easy to be against it.
Yeah. And that's also not what really a safe space is for, right? A safe space is for, you know, people that are marginalized, like gay people, to go to a place that's a judgment-free zone for them, right?
It's their clubhouse.
Yeah. But
people were so against it. And we heard from so many people, we're so against it. We're so against it. We're going to vote for Trump. We don't even agree with him. We're so against it. We're going to vote for him.
Right.
Well,
he's a
safe spacer, man.
Right.
Like the guy you said, okay, safe spaces are a big enough deal. I'm willing to make sure that women don't have a right to choose anymore.
Because safe space.
Because safe space, and your fucking president is triggered. Figure it out, man.
Maybe what the cast of Hamilton should have done is put a trigger warning. Yes,
right.
They should have put a trigger warning in the playbill,
yeah,
so that everybody would have known that this was a declared safe space,
yeah,
for your SJW warrior president.
SJW warriors
is redundant. I'm sorry. 2 p.m. in the afternoon. I caught you, Tom. Yeah, right. Fuck me.
And that Trump had a 20% chance of winning. That's so right. You move along.
But then you look along the timeline, and exactly, this is 8:30 p.m. Eastern time. We went on the air.
That's when we went on Daystar.
We went on Daystar.
Thank you, Marcus Lamb, right there.
At 7:30 at night, we went on the air, but we have a prayer room here. Yeah. We had people all across the United States joining with our prayer room here in Dallas in prayer. And look what happened. This was the moment when the whole race broke, when prayer began, the church came out. And then we see a 30-point swing here, a 30-point swing here. And now we see the swing to 95% chance of winning Trump, 5% chance of winning Clinton. It's phenomenal.
You're fucking retarded. You are retarded. You think that your prayer changed? That she's pointing to a moment when she started praying and then it changed. It changed in response to data that had occurred and that was now being measured. The acts that the data was measuring, yeah, occurred before it was able to be measured and reported, which means the prayers came after it.
Well, what?
Right?
Well, yeah. Well,
so how could the prayer have initiated the action?
No. I think what she's saying is that she prayed to God and God changed the votes.
What?
Well, that's the only other option, right?
Not the voters' minds and hearts.
No. It can't be the voters' minds and hearts. It cannot be. No, if you prescribe to her thought, I think she's saying the votes just changed.
Well, then that's not what the people want.
Well, it doesn't matter.
But that's
what God wants.
Then God.
No, because there's no way. Because like you said, all those things happen in these times, the 6:30, 5:30. Those are when the people are voting. So people are coming in and voting.
Right.
And then if you pray after the fact, what could you possibly affect?
No, you're right. That's terrible.
The only thing you could do is be like, God, go back in time 5 hours and make people vote differently. But I don't think that's what – if you believe this – and again – because it's so logically inconsistent, I don't think you can believe any of it.
I hope not.
But I think she's saying...
Oh, God,
saying,
I didn't even consider
right,
that.
Isn't that what she's saying?
That is so, like, fucking back to the future.
The very best part, the very, 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 very best part of this is all the people who voted Trump, you agree with this woman.
Oh, my God.
You two agree on something.
And then get the vote. So
and,
wait a minute.
And
so,
this reinforces something that I've been saying for a long time, which is I think I have much more in common with a liberal Christian than I would with a conservative atheist. I feel like if I ran into a very conservative atheist, I wouldn't have as much in common. The converse of that is true. You people who voted for Trump have much more in common with the Christian conservative right than you'll ever have with me, which is a liberal atheist. The converse of that is true.
I guess so, probably. Yeah, very probably.
Yeah.
Because that is so, Cecil, that is so literally crazy that until you elucidated it, I simply could not have imagined it. That is some fucking flux capacitor shit. That's like, that's falling and fucking hitting your head on the toilet and inventing a fucking time machine. Crazy. It's that crazy, Cecil.
The only way you pray and change votes is if you magically change the vote.
So that means that again, I have to say it out loud because it's so astonishingly obtuse that means that she is celebrating an anti-democratic viewpoint.
It sounds like
this woman who has spent all of this time fucking jerking off America. She's got her fucking hand right on Florida and it's whoa. She's
no
fucking lotioned
what,
up. She's ready to go.
But no matter what, though, no matter what, you are for anti-democratic stuff. Regardless of the two outcomes. If you think prayer affects it, you're not for democracy.
Because it either changes people's minds,
absolutely,
which would be kind of against their will. Don't we already have a history of where God doesn't do that?
Yeah.
God like hardened Pharaoh's heart, right? The fucking Pharaoh was like, everybody's died like 17 times over, and God hardened his heart so he can't change his mind so he can visit meaner shit upon the people for no reason at all. Just he can't even change his mind. So it's just mean. At that point, it's just mean. He has a history of just being a dick.
Well, with as sensitive as Trump's been, maybe he'll get his heart hardened, too.
He's had it hardened. Two sizes too hard.
This graphic that was produced by the New York Times should tell believers and pastors the power of prayer, the power of action. And here it is, a graphic. The night isn't even over. The decision hasn't even been fully made yet about the presidency. And already we know that the glory goes to the God Almighty.
It's bullshit.
It's phenomenal, though. And the thing is like she's saying the prayer is phenomenal. And now there's a minute of this left. I'm curious if she's actually going to try to contend with
the God of the universe, the sovereign Lord. He is the one who did this for us. He did because his people got on their knees and cried out to Holy God and said, we can't go down this road anymore. Father, we ask you for your mercy. And this is the proof positive of what the Lord did. The Lord did this.
And so wait a minute. Can I just comment still, even if you believe this, on how fucking weak sauce of an intervention this was? Like, he's still like, well, I'll change their minds, but I won't even change them to where they get all the popular. Like, I'll go back and change the votes,
yeah,
but only enough to sway the electoral college.
Exactly, yeah.
I'm going to take the 1.5 million votes that Hillary got more than Trump, because that's what I read today.
Right now. And there's still more
votes
coming in.
And they're still counting them, right? So God's just like, look, I'll influence the electoral college, but sure, let's not get crazy. Yeah. You know where I would believe this? I would believe this if all of a sudden, like, God was like, I changed them all.
Yep.
I just changed, because I know how I voted.
Yeah.
Right? I know how I voted. I know how you voted.
Yeah.
There's a handful of people, I know how you voted.
Yeah.
They changed them all. They changed them all. But instead, he changes just enough to win the electoral college. That's it? That's how it was changed?
And it still stays 50-50.
Yeah, exactly.
Is it like a tug of war? Is Satan changing other ones? Like, is Satan being like, no, we're going for Hill Dog?
God's there.
I want you to go, all you demons with your pointy tails. I want you to knock those Chads out. I want you to knock all those Chads completely out. I don't want any hanging Chads.
Well, there's a lot of ballot machines for me to get to. It's like Santa Claus coming down the chimney pipe. I got to go in all them ballot machines, and I didn't get to it until like 7:30. A Matlock was on. I had to watch that. And then my coon dog needed a bath. Now, I asked one of my angels to do it. I mean, he did it, I guess, but he just did the least possible. It's like, you lazy motherfucker.
I didn't send any of them to Chicago or California or Oregon.
You know what? Flip the whole West Coast.
Washington or New York or Vermont or Maine or Massachusetts.
Or basically where educated people live.
Or where they have colleges. Paved roads, and they don't care about anal sex. So we're joined again by Matt Dillahunty. Matt, recently you had an opportunity to have a conversation with Dawkins. Tell us about that.
Oh, yeah. There's a promoter in Vancouver, Pangburn Philosophy, and we're working together on a few things. I'll be doing a few debates, but he contacted me and said, hey, would you like to do, you know, one of these evening with Richard Dawkins things? He's done it with Krauss and Julia Sweeney and a bunch of others where it's, you know, the two people just sit on the stage, talk for a little bit, and then take questions. And I'm like, well, yeah, because that's absolutely no work for me. I didn't have to prepare a talk. I didn't have to do a magic show. I just had to show up and sit there. And it was fun. Richard and I, we first met 10 years ago when he was promoting The God Delusion. And I've emceed a couple of events for him. And we've, you know, had dinner a couple times, had one argument once. It was pretty cool. There was this, you know, a theater, and we sold it out. I'll claim that I sold it out, but I'm pretty sure that everybody's going to think it was Richard anyway. And mostly it was great. The only kind of mildly disappointing thing for me was the very last question is one that's, I think, really important, and it's an area where Richard and I disagree, and I was really hoping that we would get to something that we disagreed on, because, you know, I caught a bunch of crap from some people for doing this. You know, how dare you sit down with a misogynistic Islamophobe who shouldn't be, you know, blah, 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 blah. And I kept telling him, look, you know, I'm happy, you know, I blocked a couple dozen people on election night from my Facebook page, but I would still happily engage with any of them. And if you can't take an opportunity to sit down and talk about things with somebody as prominent as Richard and show people that you can disagree and not have it necessarily be the end of the world, then I don't know that you're doing anything good. And so I was looking for something that we disagreed on. Unfortunately, it came as the very last question. Oh. And Richard gave his answer. And I didn't even bother to say or add anything. I also didn't nod in agreement because I didn't want to end the evening on this. Well, hang on a minute. I think that's wrong. And here's why. I almost did. And then I realized I don't need to have Richard in order to make my point on the issue. I can produce a video whenever I want. I can talk about it in lectures, you know, and it was something I'd been planning to talk about anyway. So it was better to kind of let the evening end that way. And I know that when the video goes up, I'm going to hear from people, why didn't you challenge him on the, and I'll explain to them that I thought it was much better to perhaps discuss it in private and then talk about my position in a video and go from there. We had a good time though. We bashed William Lane Craig without ever saying his name. Because Craig is desperate to debate Dawkins and absolutely refuses to debate me. And he came up with just this awful, pretentious, arrogant justification, which is, well, Matt doesn't have a terminal degree in the relative field. And I was like, how can you say that before we've even come up with what the topic of the debate is?
Right?
Now, granted, I don't have a terminal degree in anything. I don't have any degree in anything. But if the topic is secular humanism versus Christianity, well, those aren't things with terminal degrees. And I'm pretty sure any secular humanist organization on the planet would give me an honorary degree if that's what you really required to have the conversation. But Craig will happily debate Sean Carroll on physics and get his ass handed to him in an embarrassing fashion when Craig doesn't have a terminal degree in physics. And so Richard and I pretty much agreed and suggested that to all of our friends who are real scientists, who have real terminal degrees, whenever William Lane Craig comes to talk to you about debating, you should just refuse because he doesn't have a terminal degree in the field that you're going to be talking about, and you're using his own criteria to exclude him. I know why he wants people with degrees, and it's because he needs credentialed individuals coming from an academic background so that he can play his debating games, because he's a collegiate 4 points debater. And he gets up and speaks first, and he's like, now in order for my opponent to win, he needs to do, and that's the wrong accent for him, but he needs to do this, this, and this. And as soon as I stand up, the first words out of my mouth are going to be, everything that he told you about what I need to do to win is wrong, and displays that he doesn't understand the burden of proof. If he hasn't made his case, I don't have to say a thing, and he still loses. That's the nature of when you're making a proposition. And what Craig's trying to get you to believe is that I need to disprove God in order to win. And that's just bizarrely wrong. But we had a good time at the event, and, I'm looking forward to do more of them. I have an event coming up also, I think in Vancouver, that I can't give too many details about, but because I actually have the contract in front of me, I can tell you that, it'll be me and James Randi, but I can't give out any other details.
Okay. Oh, that'll be great.
That'll be great. That sounds awesome. So tell us about us. Seth's having his 300th episode, and it sounds like he's got an amazing group of people set up. You're set to join him that week, right?
Yeah, it's this weekend. It's Saturday. I'm supposed to be practicing right now, but
but we've eaten up your time. If the show flops, it's our fault. Yeah.
Right. I plan to get up there and start by saying that, you know, if any of my tricks fail, it is entirely Tom and Cecil's fault.
The crowd will look around. Who?
Yeah,
who?
Exactly.
Oh, no. It's a podcast. So Seth. Seth contacted me, and he's getting ready to do his 300th show. And, of course, the first thing I did was like, really? 300? Wow. Yeah, I think we're on episode 975.
That's true.
It's like, oh, that's cute. Yeah, that's not.
Let me help you celebrate your bar mitzvah there.
Adolescence is so nice to grow into.
Oh, that's adorable.
Right after asking when his testicles drop.
God, with a voice like that, it would rumble the earth if his testicles drop any further.
No kidding.
It's good dreamy. Lord. I mean, I would almost jump the fence for Seth's voice. But yeah, he said, hey, I'm thinking about doing this. I'm thinking about doing it in Dallas and, you know, getting a few friends together. And, you know, maybe we'll get like, you know, 50 or 100 people to show up and we'll kind of make a little miniature convention out of it. And I, of course, say yes, because I'm going to say yes to anything Seth wants pretty much. We've been really good friends for years now, ever since we met at the Oklahoma Freethought Convention. But yeah, it's going to be, I don't even know who all's on there. I know Shelley's going to be there and Arn Raw. And it's really just a bunch of friends. And Seth was like, hey, would it be, instead of just doing a talk, I kind of want to have fun with it. You want to do a magic show? And I was like, yeah, because I'd done magic at several different conventions. I started a Skepticon talk, two Skepticon talks with it. I did a whole show at Apostacon. I did a whole show at the American Atheist Convention in Memphis. And I'm doing more and more, even with magic outside the atheist community. And I'm going to have an actual tour that's all about magic and not about atheism. I'm going to do somewhere between 30 minutes and an hour because I haven't timed everything.
Well, you've got till Saturday.
Oh, yeah.
Well, he also put me last. He said I could go last, and that way he's like, you can take a whole hour if you want. You can do, you know, whatever. Good.
So if people are going to find your stuff, where would they look, Matt?
Oh, probably the main place is patreon.com/atheistdebates. I post 3 or possibly 4, usually 3, videos a month, where I take either a topic like a version of the teleological argument or something you're more likely to run into with friends and family, like, you know, look at the trees or y'all just want to sin or whatever, and talk about, you know, the right ways and the wrong ways from my perspective of how to deal with it. I also post the debates I do, and I post reviews of the debates where I go through and I pick out the high points and the low points, the flaws from both myself and my opponent, because you've got to be that nitpicky so that you're not the one that's there making bad arguments. And I've made plenty of mistakes in debates, and I'm not always the one that's going to find them. But if I can get to the point where I can point out the mistakes in the debates to other people, then hopefully they won't make them. And on occasion, I'll do an interview with somebody, because as much as I'd love to be the sole arbiter of what makes for good debate, I'm not. There are other people who debate, and there are other people who think about it. And I want to get input and feedback from pretty much anybody who has thoughts on the subject, because I don't want a bunch of mini-me's. I don't want a bunch of Hitchens clones. I want people going out and engaging comfortably, being willing to say, I don't know, when that is the correct answer, and to not fall into silly traps and to be able to spot fallacies. And it's been really interesting, because we're kind of branching out from some of that.
Well, Matt, thanks so much for joining us today. We really do appreciate it.
Oh, anytime. I appreciate it.
So we want to thank our most recent patrons: Philip, Shane, Matthew, Cecilia, Andrew, LPD Happy, Derek, David, PJ, Todd, Monty the Funk Monkey,
of course,
Amy, Susanna, Eric, Steve, Chris, Richard, Beat Duck, Matthew, Stella, Al, Christopher, Lick My Danish Slowly. Okay. Actually, no, Tom, that's all Tom. Tom has never licked a Danish slowly. Like, Tom will inhale a Danish. Like, if you want your Danish eaten like a bulldog eating a plate of custard, Tom will eat the fuck out of that Danish.
I am unafraid to eat your Danish. I'm just saying. But if it's fucking cheesy, that's a one-time deal.
Then he's probably...
I gotta go.
Yeah, no.
I might go just, team donut if that's
just
the case.
Just bring a couple meatballs next time.
I'll bring the meatballs.
Jason, Pascal, John, Philip, CJ, Amy, Jared, and Dana. Thanks so much for your generous donations. We really do appreciate all the support from all our patrons. I want to go over a little bit of email today before we leave. So we got a message about NAFTA, Tom. And this is interesting because a bunch of people were talking about like whether or not we were right or wrong, depending on what we were talking about when we did the 100 Days episode. And one of the messages we got were about NAFTA. And this message is from Mark. And Mark says, what we need to see in NAFTA are three changes: reasonable minimum wage in all countries, collective bargaining rights for all workers, and environmental safety and standards. And so, because we were spending a lot of time on the tariffs,
on the tariff side,
because that's something that, you know, like when you start thinking about it, like that's what you're really thinking about, at least, you know, for amateurs like us. So thank you for bringing that up to our attention.
Right. And, you know, his other point, which I thought was well made, was that by increasing the minimum wage and increasing the amount of income that Mexican workers have in a free trade environment, that increases the amount of goods and services that will be purchased across the board.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's just kind of what everybody's ship rises, right? So that's kind of the idea, is get everybody's ship to rise.
Yeah. We got a message from Greg, and Greg had posted this link to us, and it's a link to a page that says, "Say hello to Mr. Trump." And it's essentially a bunch of different articles about Trump that are sort of negative articles about Trump that that sort of explain some of the things that people have a problem with, like his truthfulness, whether or not he's truthful, his vindictiveness, his racism, as explained in some of these articles, his sexism, his Islamophobia, his bigotry, his misogyny, xenophobia, etc. So if you're interested in finding out what these particular articles say about Donald Trump, you could take a look at those articles. The link will be on this episode show notes, episode 327. We got a message from Katie.
This is great.
And Katie says, "The new thanks Obama must become damn it, Donald." I like that. I think she's right.
I think it's great.
Damn it, Donald.
And I like too that it can also be said with resignation, like, damn it, Donald.
Yeah, that's true. I guess everything for the next 4 years I'm gonna be saying with resignation.
Right. So. God, I hope he resigns. That's what I hope. God, and then you get Pence. I don't even know what I hope. I'm in a place where I don't even know what to hope for anymore.
Exactly.
Like, I don't even know how to hope properly.
We got a message from Angela. Angela says, "Since we're going to need a place to put all these illegals Trump plans to incarcerate, we should just put a bunch of jail cells in the wall so we have a giant prison at the border instead of plain old wall. Seems feasible."
It's just good. You know what this reminded me? It's like hanging the pirates at the port, right? It's just what it reminded me of immediately.
That's awesome. We got a message from one Heath Enright.
Heard of him.
Of
heard
scathing
of him.
Atheist fame. And he said, "Amazing post-election episode, guys. Really great analysis. I'll eat nothing but Pizzeria Uno if you can fix this."
Oh, God, I want to fix this.
First off, eating anything but Pizzeria Uno will not fix anything.
That's true.
The only thing it'll do is fix your colon.
That'll
from letting
you
go to the bathroom.
That's like packing a musket after a while, right?
Right.
Oh, God. Oh, the blunderbuss is full.
Exactly.
It's going to blow. Yeah,
Pizzeria Uno isn't very good.
No, it's not
food.
It's
pretty terrible. So we got a message from Amy, and Amy sent us a message. She said she's coming up to Chicago. She's from Tennessee. And she says, "I'm wondering if you might be going to the Pig Face show on Black Friday. My brother and I are coming up that weekend. I'm not going to be going to the Pig Face show on Friday, but on Thursday I am going to make a pig face at home and I'm going to eat the pig face." I don't know if that counts.
If it's Cheeks and Jowls, yeah. I'm in.
I used to listen to a song. There's one album I own by Pig Face. I do own a Pig Face album. But I can't.
Do you still own the Pig Face album?
It's on my phone.
It's on your,
I could play it. Like, I could play a,
play me a Pig Face song.
I'm not going to play
it. I don't know a Pig Face.
You know, there was,
do I know Pig
There was
face?
One song they had. It was like, "Fuck It Up, Pig Face." Is what
oh,
song.
I know that song.
Right?
Yeah.
That's a Pig Face
I
song.
I want to go to the Pig Face show.
Yeah. It's like,
I need a babysitter for Black Friday, so I go to the
timey.
Kids, daddy has to go to the Pig Face show.
Daddy comes home with a Pig Face.
Just
go. Give daddy a hug. I'm never going by daddy again.
You've never looked so good, dad.
We got a message from, this is from E. And E sent this along, and E said that in Canada, we have this thing where we elected this prime minister or whatever, the king or whatever they elected, and this guy by the name of Trudeau. And they have this website called the Trudeau Meter, and they spelled meter with a superfluous end E there. They flipped it.
They spell it backwards. Yeah,
it's weird.
So they're Moose in Charge or whatever they're calling it. I don't know.
The Moose web designer.
He made his big Canadian promises about how he's going to redistribute the maple syrup or whatever.
I promise
Canada?
A beaver pelt in every pot.
I promise that the walleye fishing will be great all year. Like, okay. Who cares? Who cares? We'll all share our dollar.
Let's
all go to Tim Hortons.
But E sent this along, and E had this really great site and said, hey, there's this Trudeau meter. Somebody should do this for Trump. Well, somebody's already done this for Trump. There's a Trump meter website, and it has all his promises, and it has a way to sort of check up on him to see if these are complete or if they're not going to be, if he's already broken them, et cetera. So I don't know that anything's been updated on it since it's been created. I think right now everything is just sort of, I think at the inauguration they're going to start going through, but so there's nothing really right now that's listed, but it does list all of his promises. There's 102 promises that they've listed on here. So we'll put a link on this episode show notes. This is interesting. We got a bunch of messages about this, Tom. We did kind of mess up a little bit when we talked about welfare, because Jesse Lee Peterson was talking about welfare last time.
Right. And so it turns out that back in the 1930s to 1960s, 35 to 68, it looks like. And I did do a little bit of reading on this. There was a man in the house rule. It was a fucked up rule. Yeah. Actually, it was a super fucked up rule. And I think he had a right to be pissed about it 50 years ago.
Yeah.
So 50 years ago, there was a rule basically that said, you know, if there was a man in the house or somebody sleeping with the woman of the house. And then there was this crazy, like the rule got even more convoluted because some people were like, well, if he's, you know, if they're having sex once a week, it counts. Or one was like once every 3 months, it counts. Like,
and it couldn't like receive welfare. Months. Yeah, that's right. What you're saying,
you,
right?
You couldn't get welfare if there was a man in the house. Weird. Or a man like sort of associated with the house. So I guess in the sense that back in the late 1960s, that still existed.
Yeah. Well, and he was talking about the past. So we will give Jeff Cecily Peterson the benefit of the doubt. One of the things he said was true. We got a message from Christine, and Christine was like, hey, I went back and listened to old stuff to get to a simpler time.
I think that's so funny.
And Christine said a couple of things, but one of the things that that Christine said was February 13th, 2017 is your 5-year anniversary with Thomas.
Isn't that crazy?
That we should do is something with him. And then it says March 11th is your 5-year anniversary with Jake. Oh. So we should do something with Jake too. And then she mentions here too, Grandma Lois.
I know.
Do you remember Grandma Lois?
I do remember Grandma Lois, and I hope that Grandma Lois, if you're still out there.
Yeah.
I hope you're still out there, Grandma Lois.
Yeah. So
but this is the best. I like that she writes, and here's an all remember that was a simpler time moment. Remember Herman Cain, Rick Santorum, Pope Benedict, anti-gay marriage bigots. I hear they're coming back in fashion. And Rick Perry. It was nice when you only got praise for being feminist, though.
Oh,
I think that's great.
Wow. Well, that was great. Thanks,
thank you, Christina.
Thanks, Christina. You brought me back to a simpler time. I want to thank Matt Dillahunty for joining us today. Thanks so much, Matt, for coming on. And we know that this is coming out after he did his show, his magic show with Seth at his 300th
indeed
episode party. But we hope that that magic show went well. Check out Matt's stuff. He does atheist debates. You can find him on Patreon. You can also find the Atheist Experience on YouTube. And you can find Matt's debates all over YouTube.
Right. So if you Google atheist debates, you're going to find Matt Dillahunty.
Yeah, you're going to find Matt Dillahunty. So we want to thank him for coming on. That was a lot of fun. That's going to wrap it up for this week. We're going to leave you like we always do with the Skeptic's Creed.
Credulity is not a virtue. It's fortune cookie cutter, mommy issue, hypno Babylon bullshit. Couched in scientician, double bubble, toil and trouble, pseudo quasi alternative, acupunctuating, pressurized, stereogram, pyramidal, free energy healing, water downward spiral, brain deadpan, sales pitch, late night info docutainment. Leo, Pisces, cancer cures, detox, reflex, foot massage, death and towers, tarot cards, psychic healing, crystal balls, Bigfoot, Yeti, aliens, churches, mosques, and synagogues, temples, dragons, giant worms, Atlantis, dolphins, truthers, birthers, witches, wizards, vaccine nuts, shaman healers, evangelists, conspiracy, doublespeak, stigmata, nonsense. Expose your signs. Thrust your hands, bloody, evidential, conclusive. Doubt even this.
The opinions and information provided on this podcast are intended for entertainment purposes only. All opinions are solely that of Glory Hole Studios, LLC. cognitive dissonance makes no representations as to accuracy, completeness, currentness, suitability, or validity of any information, and will not be liable for any errors, damages, or butthurt arising from consumption. All information is provided on an as-is basis. No refunds. Produced in association with the local Dairy Council and viewers like you.